This week's Torah portion is Parshas Bo, which is the third Parsha in the book of Shemos. Interestingly, the word Bo itself, which is made of the two Hebrew letters Aleph and Bet, Aleph is one, and numerically Bet is two. That equals three. One of the classical commentators on the Chumash, the Baal HaTurim, writes that Aleph and Bet, which equals three, is because, or alludes to the fact that in this week's Parsha, we're going to be reading about the last three of the 10 Makos, the 10 plagues. And that's in fact what the Parsha is about, mostly the last three of the 10 plagues. Finally, the 10th plague, the slaying of the firstborn. Of course, Moshe informs Paro this is going to happen, and Paro eventually comes running in the middle of the night to the Jewish people. You must leave right now. Moshe says, no, we're not going to leave middle of the night. We're going to leave at high noon the next day to show that we are not being sneaky about it. We're leaving with your full permission. So that's the bulk of the Parsha. The end of the Parsha, the last part, contains the mitzvahs of remembering the Passover experience and celebrating Pesach, also putting on tefillin. And in fact, the last two paragraphs of this week's Parsha are written into each of the tefillin, the hand tefillin, and the head tefillin on parchment scrolls, along with the other two paragraphs for a total of four in each one that are the first two paragraphs of the Shema. So let's talk about the name Pesach, name Passover. What does Pesach mean, and where does that name Pesach, which is the name of our holiday Passover, come from? And the answer is in the middle of this week's Parsha, chapter 12, verse 23, it says, Hashem is telling Moshe eventually tells Paro, that the angel, the Mashchis, not the angel, but the destroyer, who is identified in the Haggadah as none other than Hashem himself, will Pasach Hashem ala Pesach, will Pasach, and we ordinarily translate Pasach as will jump over, will skip over the doorway of each Jewish home, and will not allow the destruction of the death, which is the destruction of each firstborn, to occur in any Jewish home. Now, this is interesting. This is interesting because, in fact, when we look at Rashi's commentary, when we look at Rashi's commentary on the word Pesach, Rashi makes the following interesting comment. Rashi says, what does Pesach mean? Pesach means vichamal, which means in Hebrew, God will have mercy. Doesn't mean to jump over, it means to be merciful. And Rashi then makes the comment after that, v'yesh lomar is also possible to say v'dileg, that it means to jump over. So Rashi's first comment is that Pasach, in fact, the holiday of Passover, doesn't mean the holiday of Passover. It should be called the holiday of being merciful, because that's what Pasach means, Rashi explains to us. And Rashi is quoting and taking this comment from Unkelus, who is the first translator of the Chumash, the original Aramaic translation written at the time of the right after the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the second temple period. There was a convert, Roman convert, his name was Unkelus, translates the Torah and also gives us insight and commentary into the Chumash about 1,000 years or so before Rashi. So Rashi is quoting Unkelus that Pesach means v'chamal, to have mercy. Well, why would Hashem be telling Moshe that the reason the Jewish nation is not going to be subject to the 10th plague is because of Hashem having mercy? This makes no sense. Telling a people who are afflicted in the middle of slavery that the reason that final and the most extreme of the plagues, where people are actually going to die instantly, is going to be not applied to the Jewish people only because Hashem has mercy. This seems to imply that, in fact, the Jews were not that righteous, not that meritorious, and should possibly have been subject, God forbid, to this plague. And Hashem had mercy. Now, in fact, when we take a look at the entirety of the story, that's exactly the fact, as astounding as it seems. And this is clear from so many different aspects of the Passover story. In the very end of the parsha, the Torah talks about the firstborn and how Hashem had mercy on the firstborn, and therefore the firstborn are special. Hashem spared the firstborn. So clearly, if you say a person is spared, it means that you were subject to something that wasn't applied to you. And the question, of course, is why? Why, in fact, were the Jews subject to this? Now, I just want to pause for a moment and say that Rashi does explain to us that what happened in the slaying of the firstborn was the that many of the Egyptians who actually believed that's going to happen decided to have their children, their firstborn kids, take up lodging for the night in the Jewish homes. And the Jews had no choice but to allow them in. They were forced to allow them in. And therefore, Hashem is saying, I'm going to, even though the you have blood on the homes, on the doorposts, yes, it's true that the Jews are not going to die, but those in people in your homes who are Egyptian, who are firstborn, who deserve to die, will die. And that's the mercy, the differentiation between the two. So that's one commentary. Rashi doesn't make that comment, however, but that is a comment that's made. But let's go back to the story. So we also know that when Hashem was destroying the Egyptians in the Red Sea, the angels, famous Medrash, say to Hashem, why are you saving the Egyptians and destroying the Jews? Opposite, why are you saving the Jews and destroying the Egyptians? Halalu avodei avodazara. These are idol worshippers and these are idol worshippers. They're both the same. They're acting the same. And Hashem says, I've chosen the Jews. Don't mix into my business. The Jews are my special people. When we go back to the beginning of the story of the Exodus of Egypt, the beginning of the book of Shemos, the beginning of the book of Exodus, where Hashem appears to Moshe on the burning bush, which is actually on Mount Sinai, we receive the Torah later on. Hashem says to Moshe, go tell the Jewish people, Eke Asher Eke, I will be with you in this Tzaris, in this Golus, in this exile, and I will redeem you also from future exiles. Which implies that Hashem knew right away that we're going to mess up, we're going to be kicked out of our country, and there'll be future exiles. Which implies that Hashem knew that we're not that, ay, we're not that great. To which, of course, Moshe responds to Hashem. Rashi tells us, why would you tell the Jews it's going to be future exiles at this point in time? They have enough to handle, enough on their plate. And Hashem says to Moshe, in fact, I'm not telling you to tell this to the Jews. This is information for you. But to the Jews, you should just say, yes, I'll redeem you from this exile. Don't mention any future tzaris. But we are told this in the Chumash. And therefore, we are given this information that the Jewish nation, in fact, at the time, was not meritorious and did not deserve on their own, under their own steam, to be redeemed from Egypt. It was because of Hashem's mercy. And of course, Rashi also tells us this, that the Hashem gave us the mitzvah of having the first Korban Pesach, the first Passover experience, slaughtering the lamb, rejecting the Egyptian idol worship, which was lamb, and in Egypt before the slaying of the firstborn, in order so that we should have some merit, some tangible merit, something we've actually done, in spite of the fact that we've spoken in past weeks that the Jews at that time had great merit, they were cultural Jews, and that was the merit. The Gemara tells us the fact that they didn't change their name, their method of dress, or their language. So from the entire story, what we have is that the Jewish nation was essentially not without great merit. In fact, we're going to read in next week's parsha that 80% of the Jews refused to follow Moshe out into the desert and therefore died during this plague of darkness. 20% who left, we're going to find out later, worship the golden calf, a lot of those, a lot of the 20%. And then complained incessantly throughout the 40 years in the desert about all kinds of things. And yes, we made it through, and yes, we are the special Jewish people. But it turns out that basically the relationship that we have with Hashem is not based so much, or essentially, or at least as a bedrock foundation, on our actions at all. It's based on Hashem choosing us. And this concept we find in the blessing that we recite before reading the Torah or studying Torah. And the blessing is, Baruch Hashem, bless you Hashem, Master of the Universe, Asher Bachar Banu Michal. Asks, Hashem chose the Jewish nation. Which part of us did Hashem choose? The human being is made of two parts, the neshama, the soul, and the body. So you can choose a person's soul, you can choose a person's body. When we have a friend, when we have a spouse, when we have a business partner, which part of that person do we choose when we decide to become their friend, their spouse, their partner? Do we choose their body? Are we attracted to the person because of their outside, their shell? Or do we choose their soul? Do we choose their inside? One would hope that the answer is we choose their inside. It's not only about their skin, not only about the amount of money the person has or how they look or whatever external wonderful things they may have, but it's about who they are inside. One would hope that that's the basis of our relationships. Turns out that the basis of Hashem's relationship with us is, yes, for the same reason, because of our neshamas. But the choosing part is not, Hashem did not choose, Hasidus explains, our neshamas, our souls. Hashem chose our bodies. And what that means is that our souls are part of Hashem himself. You can't choose something that's part of you. The idea of choosing, the concept, the word choosing means when you have two things that are essentially equal, you don't know which one to pick, so you choose one. But if one serves your needs better than the other, this type of car is better than that type of car for some reason. This person to be hired is better than that person to be hired for your company for some reason. They have better qualities or whatever. You're not choosing one over the other. You're simply selecting the one that actually fits the job, that actually does the job. It's not your choice. It's the person's qualifications. So now we come to a very deep and very fundamental understanding of our relationship with Hashem, expressed in the word Pesach, as Rashi explains, Chamal, having mercy. If Pesach would mean Hashem jumped over because of our actions, that would mean that the relationship that we have with God is based on our actions. If we do good, we got relationship. If we don't do good, the relationship, God forbid, is severed. Because Rashi translates for us in the literal meaning that Pesach means having mercy, it means the relationship is not dependent at all on our actions. The bechira, the choice that Hashem chooses, is because of our internal, our neshama. It's not our guf, it's not our body, it's not what our body does. Yes, Hashem chooses which body to invest with a Jewish soul and which body to invest with a non-Jewish power plant, non-Jewish nefesh, non-Jewish a soul. And in fact, on Yom Kippur afternoon, the one of the holiest day of the year, we read all about Hashem loves each person in the world, non-Jewish nations too, where Hashem sends Yonah the prophet to make sure that the city of Nineveh is not destroyed. And when Yonah is distressed, why are you spending so much energy and effort on warning this non-Jewish city who are clearly wicked and deserving of destruction? Hashem says, what do you mean? They are my work of my hands. They are they're my creation. How could I not have mercy on them? So in fact, the Jewish nation is taught that Hashem loves every single individual, Jew or non-Jew, but Hashem chooses the Jewish people, and the choice that Hashem chooses us is the message of this week's parsha. The choice that Hashem chooses us is the lesson that we need to take away. It's a top-down relationship. Yes, we need to do our best to live up to that choice. We need our best to live up to that incredibly and awesome gift that Hashem gives us to be His special people, His Am Segula, His wonderful special nation. But it is not dependent on us. It is top down. Hashem chooses us, and that is the basis of our belief. That's the basis of our peoplehood. So I wish you a good Shabbos. I also want to mention to you that this Shabbos is the Shabbos of the 10th of Shvat. It's the yahrzeit of the previous Rebbe who passed away in 1950. It's the anniversary of the Rebbe accepting leadership of Chabad in 1951. And the Rebbe specifically asked us that on this day we should talk about how our Rebbes love each Jew, care about each Jew. Yes, we can dwell on their saintliness, their personal observance of Torah and mitzvahs to a T, their personal level of incredible scholarship. All of these are true and worthy of dwelling on and speaking about, but the Rebbe specifically asked us to talk about how they cared for the essence of each Jew, underlining, in fact, the power of each of our neshamas, underlining, in fact, that the connection between us as a Jewish nation is not based on how frum we are, not based on how observant we are, is not based on how wonderful we are, even how nice we are. Even though, yes, we're supposed to be frum and observant and nice, it doesn't mean we shouldn't be. That's absolutely our obligation and our privilege and our need. But the relationship that we have between us is based on the fact that we are family, that we are one neshama, all connected between ourselves. And that one neshama that we have, the shared universal neshama, which in the language of the Zohar is called Knesset Yisrael, the congregation of Israel, metaphoric term for the root of all of our souls connected in the highest of levels. That one neshama is part of Hashem Himself, and on some deep, deep mystical level. So that's the power of this week's parsha, and that is the power of us, therefore, as a Jewish nation.